Well, hey folks, Mark DiMatteo coming at you all with a brand new audio going out to our Great Questions group. This is actually, folks, message number 30. It is called Augmenting the Answers to Atoms Part 2. Subtitle could be called The God Particle. Okay? And looking forward to sharing with you all, but as always, just wanted to let everybody know that since I last talked to you, I continue to reach out to new folks that are, again, interested in being a part of our group. My email group has actually grown to well over 700 friends that are on it now. As a matter of fact, I believe we're over 730 folks now, so that's pretty cool. So if you're new to these messages, I'd like to give you an official welcome, even though I've talked to pretty much all of you all personally prior to now. But anyway, glad to have you with us, and trust these will be profitable to you, and you'll enjoy them like the rest of us do. So anyway, let's get cranked up here because I've got kind of a longer message today, but I'm amped about sharing with you all, so I want to move right through this information. So we are going to get rolling here. So, folks, in the previous message to this one, we carefully re-examined the atom's existence in light of both the first and second laws of thermodynamics, and saw how these two universal laws seem to completely preclude any rational possibility of atoms coming into existence all by themselves, simply through time and chance. In fact, based on what our examination framework, that model that we have been putting together based on the laws we've been studying, and I'm sure everybody remembers that, but this examination framework is what we've been calling it, and what it has taught us about the real observable cosmos and how it operates, the fact that there are indeed atoms means that therefore some truly extraordinary conditions must be being met to account for their existence. And furthermore, the fact that these conditions are being met holds both significant and compelling implications for those of us seeking answers to the great questions. Therefore, we are going to continue to elaborate on some of these implications that I had briefly discussed in message number 25. And with that in mind, folks, before we actually get into the meat of the message, let me just take a quick moment at this point to re-emphasize the importance of understanding the context that the previous messages have built. And if any of you have not yet had the opportunity to hear the information covered on these audios, the ones leading up to this one, I would encourage you to do so when you have a convenient moment. That way, you will have the benefit of understanding the foundation that we have developed up to this point and that framework which we spoke of, which will help bring the context and significance of what we're discussing here into much clearer focus. And again, all these previous audios are in chronological order, and they are all posted on my website, which is simply markdematteo.com, markdematteo. Okay, so continuing on then. Folks, as you and I now know, based on what we've discussed, okay, up to this point, the only way to overcome the second law of thermodynamics, or what we also call the universal law of decay, and allow any type of order to arise is for those all-important four conditions to be met, which I have referred to and I like to call the four P's because it helps me remember them: the parts, the power, the plans, and the process. Okay? And as such, this must also apply to the remarkable order of the atom. Therefore, we must ask ourselves, how did the atomic parts arise? Where does the atom's proportionately vast power come from? And how did their plans arise, as well as the process for both their assembly and operation? For as we now know, there must be some type of adequate explanation or cause for each of them. Right? I mean, we know that now, okay? And furthermore, we must remember that collectively, atoms are an enormous cosmic effect. In fact, atoms and their three parts have been called the universal modules. For folks, there are protons and neutrons in every nucleus, electrons in every atom. Atoms bonded into every molecule, from those that comprise you and I, all the way out to the most distant galaxy. They are the fundamental building blocks of the cosmos, and friends, so far as we know, they are the only building blocks there have ever been. For as long as the cosmos has existed, atoms seem to have always been here, have never changed, and nothing else has ever come along. And isn't that kind of amazing when you stop and think about it, okay? Next, I want to point out something important regarding these four P's that I have not specifically mentioned to you all before, but perhaps you may have surmised, and it is this. Not only is it critical that each of the four components be present in general, but additionally, they must also be specifically the proper type and the right quantity of each of these components as well. To kind of bear this out with a bit of a silly example, but one that still makes the point, it would do us no good to be building, let's say, the birdhouse we talked about in previous messages, and have two steel I-beams for parts, sunshine for power, a blender for the process, and the directions for assembling a model airplane for the plans. For while we would indeed have all four components, they would obviously not be much help in building a birdhouse, right? Now, furthermore, once we have obtained the proper type and quantity of each component, they must then also be coordinated and integrated toward the specific intended end. In other words, once we have everything together that we need to build a birdhouse, it still must be built. Folks, someone or something must be capable of first understanding the plans and then be able to follow them in a proper step-by-step order so that the correct amount of the other three components can be initially organized and then subsequently assembled in an exact manner so that we end up with a properly built birdhouse, right, or anything else that we want to build, okay? Reflecting on this then, gang, it seems quite apparent that of the four, the plans are by far the most important, for they contain not only the instructions which dictate the specific type and quantity of the other three components needed, but also the process required for their coordinated assembly. So in essence, everything begins with the plans, for without them, we wouldn't know where to begin. In fact, we might not even know what we were trying to build in the first place. Now, furthermore, and this is kind of important too, folks, plans logically imply something else that's quite significant, and it is this: an inventor. Someone had to come up with the idea behind the plans to begin with. In other words, again, as an example, someone had to, quote, think up a birdhouse before any instructions could ever be created for its assembly. And this ties right into what you and I now know regarding plans from our studies of information science, which is that all plans ultimately originate in a mind. So, okay, in light of all I had learned up to this point in my journey and have attempted to briefly review with you fine folks in these audios, let me share with you some clear implications of the atom's existence, which seemed quite apparent and actually, folks, obvious to me. To begin with, as I consider the origin of the plans, it seemed quite evident that some astoundingly vast form of intelligence, or mind, must have been responsible for not only thinking up or inventing the idea of the atom in the first place, but then of being capable of working out all the details of its components, structure, assembly, and operation. And this all had to be done before the first one ever came into existence. Next, as I look at the requirement of power, friends, it seems quite clear that this mind must have somehow had access to what would seem to be virtually limitless power. For as we've already discussed, the atom, in its essence, is a physical manifestation of power, and power operating on an extraordinary level. And we've certainly discussed that. Then, as I contemplate the need for a process, it seems obvious that this intelligence must have not only had access to this vast power, but then also have been capable of harnessing, manipulating, and coordinating it to an extraordinary degree, for in the atom, this was done in fantastically small dimensions and yet on a simultaneously immense scale. Right? Okay. And finally, when I reflect on the nature of the parts themselves, the astoundingly extreme degree of this capability becomes even more evident. For folks, as we've learned, and this is just, even each of the individual fundamental atomic components themselves are not solid little things like something, say, like miniature ball bearings, okay, or something of the sort, but are rather actually pieces made of yet far, far smaller pieces that even themselves appear to have form and function only due to their power and extreme motion. In other words, folks, it may well be that, at least in the case of the protons and neutrons, because we don't even begin to fully understand what an electron is, but anyway, again, not getting too complex here, but at least in the case of the protons and the neutrons, that they are actually, now get this, that they are actually similar, perhaps, in construction to the very atoms themselves, and therefore also are essentially nothing but even smaller physical manifestations of highly structured and functioning power. Imagine that, the parts of the atom potentially being made of even smaller atoms themselves, okay, of the sort, okay? Folks, reflecting on this, this is truly incredible, mind-boggling stuff. And how can one not be touched with a sense of the infinite when considering these realities and the magnitude of them, folks? And yet, beyond all this, there is something even more significant and compelling, which is quite evident to me, and it is this. The clear reality that each of these four resources and or capabilities, the four P's, again, the conditions that must be present, okay, must be functioning and in effect right up to this present moment. Because friends, let us remember, all of the atoms are still here. And as an aside, aren't we glad that they are all still here? Because if they were not, then we would not be here too, okay, or either, all right? Folks, based on my studies, hopefully now our studies, I now knew that not only did the atoms have to be built in the first place, then they needed to be somehow controlled and operated and maintained in order for them to continue to exist. For it's not like you can just start them up and let them go. Rather, once assembled and energized, each And every one of these extraordinary entities must constantly be being maintained, okay? And I don't know if that's exactly proper English, but you get the gist of the emphasis, okay? They must be being right at this moment maintained, okay? Otherwise, if they were not, then according to the laws that we now know defined how the real observable cosmos operates, every single atom would instantaneously disintegrate. In fact, folks, the best word to use to define this condition is the word sustain. Every single atom in the cosmos, from those that compose you and me out to the most distant galaxy, is at this very moment being continuously sustained. And therefore, by implication, this same vast mind which was responsible for their assembly must also be responsible for and presently engaged in their continued operation. For each of the atom's parts must be maintained, as well as its power, along with the coordinated integration of all its components, all according to a precise and universal plan in order to sustain the continued existence of every single atom in the cosmos. Wow. Okay. Folks, these were indeed some extraordinary realities I was becoming aware of, and I was pleased to see that my investment of time and energy in my great question studies was paying off, okay? For I had found solid empirical evidence that one of the three fundamental components of our space, mass, time universe, the atom, could not logically be a product of random chance, but rather was and is a product of some type of deliberate design. And that this design had to have and must still have this transcendent mind behind it, and that by implication, this mind also logically implies a someone, a person. And folks, okay, boiling all this down, okay, here it is. A person, a someone, okay, a mind with the capability and the resources to not only create but sustain every atom in the cosmos. Well, folks, we might as well call this person God, okay? And this reality that there must be a God, I found, is the only reasonable, adequate cause for the atom, the only rational solution for or to the atomic paradox we've discussed, which I'm not going to reiterate now because, again, we've thoroughly done it in the other messages, and furthermore, the only logical conclusion that all the data from my studies pointed to. In fact, we might as well call the atom the God particle. For when we shine the light of the true nature of our universe and how it operates on it, the true nature of the cosmos, the real cosmos, this remarkable entity reflects back the clear reality of its supernatural origin. Now, this evidence, of course, was personally exciting to me, for as I have mentioned in previous messages, I was hoping to find sound scientific evidence that God existed. But I just never realized I would be able to find such clear evidence so quickly and easily. Folks, I thought I was going to have to dig and dig, okay, and dig before I might even possibly gain some kind of indication one way or the other, as I had been taught repeatedly that there was no real scientific data that supported the existence of God. Now, I'm going to come back to this topic later, that of these divergent viewpoints as to the data supporting the existence of God. But for now, as we wrap up this message and our studies of the atom, I want to introduce you to another exciting topic. In fact, another paradox. And I also mentioned this as we wrapped up the previous message. And that we are going to talk about this in the next message, okay? It revolves around what I know, I now know about this God particle, okay? And hopefully you do too. And the intriguing dichotomy, okay? And when I say dichotomy, I mean, there are these two extremes, another paradox, okay? It doesn't make any sense. Between, folks, there is, and I'm going off my notes here, but that's okay. Between, there is vast, seemingly limitless power sustaining the fundamental construct of the cosmos, the atom. And yet, everything that is built on top of it, that is built from it, is comparatively weak and is built of power that is degrading, okay? And as we've been talking about on the second law, it's running down and it's wearing out. And this is an amazing paradox. Why is this paradox here? Why is there so much vast power built into the foundation of the cosmos and such weakness built on top of it? And folks, as we explore it, I will share with you a tantalizing glimpse into a reality that I now know is possible. And honestly, you all do too. I'm just going to kind of shed some light on it. And I think it will amaze and fascinate you and perhaps thrill you as well. So stay tuned, because that's what we're going to be getting into next time. Okay? So anyway, have an awesome day. Look forward to talking to you, and we'll be in touch. Okay? Take good care, folks. Bye-bye.